go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I'm Ben Bolin.
Like that dramatic pause?
Yeah, I did. It was kind of Shatner.
It was slight, but it was there. So let's jump right into today's topic because I don't know how to feel about this one yet, and I'll tell you why. I'm pretty much sold on this idea that the 2014 Corvette Stingray is an amazing car. There's no doubt about that. Whatever I've read, whatever I've seen, whatever I've not really experienced because it's not out there yet.
Right.
But I'm pretty much sold that this thing is from the ground up. You know, an amazing, amazing vehicle. Just everything about it. Anything and everything. But I haven't seen one in person, and I'm still kind of 50-50 on the exterior design.
It's described as a treat for loyalists, but aimed at a new breed.
Yeah, okay. So I don't know if I know this is early on here to put this out there, but I'm wondering if listeners are kind of the same way. Without seeing it in person, I've only seen it on television. I've seen it in ads. I've seen, you know, on websites.
There's some videos on YouTube.
Lots of photos now because journalists have had an opportunity to drive this thing. I haven't seen one on the road, and that changes my mind completely when I see one in person.
Mm-hmm.
So, either for the positive or for the negative.
Well, you got to see it in action.
I think so. And I've called and asked my dad about this because he's been at, you know, some GM events where there's a Corvette parked there.
Mm-hmm.
And I've asked him about it, and he said, well, he likes it a lot. You know, the journalists seem to fall in love with this thing because we've got a lot of journalist reviews that are very favorable about this thing.
Yeah, surprisingly so.
And there was the Indy 500. It was the pace car this year, and it looked great there, but is that just the angles that I'm catching it from? Because there are certain angles when I wasn't quite sold on the way it looked. I don't know. Maybe I'm being way too critical about this, but that's kind of a big deal when they redesign the Corvette.
You're reminding me of Fox Mulder from The X-Files right now, because the vibe I'm getting is you want to believe.
I do. I do. I want to believe. But, you know, it's a big deal when they changed the design of the Corvette. And there were people, you know, online that were saying, please, 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 before the reveal, they're saying, please do not screw this up, GM. Don't make this a bad-looking car. This has got to be right. It's got to be right the first time. Mm-hmm. Don't bring it back in 2 years and redesign it again. Make the C7 the one that we want to buy.
Make it count. And this is interesting because, you know, anybody familiar with the history of the Corvette or the Stingray knows that the loyalists really do play a role in the development of this vehicle.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's right. And there's a lot of history there as well. Now, Corvette goes all the way back. This is the 60th year of the Corvette, by mm-hmm. the way. So it goes back to 1953. There have been seven generations, and I don't even know if we need to go through where the generations fall. But, you know, C1, 2, 3, 4, all the way through 7. Mm-hmm. Found a little interesting note about 1983, which I just want to share because it's just something unusual. Usual that maybe not everybody knows. You know, these cars were built in Flint. They were built in St. Louis. They're and now in Bowling Green, Kentucky. So they kind of moved around during production. In 1983, which falls right between the C3 and C4 generation, so 82 was the end of C3, 84 was the beginning of C4,
mm-hmm.
there was no 1983 Corvette. And some people may not have known that. I know a lot of people probably already do because we have a listener and audience that is, you know, very car savvy.
Oh, we've got some Corvette fans
We definitely do. Now, what I did find about the 83 Corvette is that, of course, it was supposed to fall, like I mentioned, between, you know, C3
and C4.
That's right. This 83 Vette, there were only 43 prototypes ever built. And all except for one of those prototypes was destroyed. And that's because there were quality issues, there were parts delays, things like that were happening at the factory level that didn't allow it to happen in 1983. So there's a gap in the Corvette production history. And that's 1983. There's that one prototype car that exists out there. It's a white car, and it's the only surviving 83 prototype. And it's currently on display at the Bowling Green, Kentucky Museum, which is the National Corvette Museum. So you can go there and see it. The car is still owned by GM. Obviously, they wanted to hang on to that. They've got such an amazing collection of cars anyways. But so this one kind of oddball, one-off car, this 83 Corvette, is still on display. You can go check it out if you want. It's just kind of an interesting side note, I thought, in the whole 60-year history.
Well, I've got a side note, too, on that. Before we continue, I have to ask, Remember we did the VH1 Corvette giveaway
episode? Yes, I do.
Which is just an amazing, amazing story, and I recommend that people listen to it. So I guess that's the one he didn't get, huh?
That is, that must be the one that the winner did not receive. Yeah, that's right. That's strange. That's a strange story, that giveaway, because, you know, because of what happened afterwards, you know, all the car, where they went and who ended up with them. And it's just it's a weird story. But yeah, we have a full episode on that, don't we?
Yeah. And so we won't lose too much time on the VH1 giveaway since we already do have a podcast out about that. However, if you are a Corvette enthusiast at all and you somehow haven't heard this episode yet, then please do everyone a favor and listen to it immediately after listening to this.
That's an order.
Oh, yeah. I guess I was going to. I really enjoyed that story.
I did, too. So. That was a cool story, and it was a neat thing that they did. And I wonder, I mean, I haven't seen anything like that ever again. There's never been anything of that scale ever to happen again, a car giveaway like that.
I know there's so many.
There are individuals.
Yeah.
But that was an amazing giveaway. What a story. So, okay, let's get back to our Stingray here.
Right.
We're talking about the 2014 Corvette Stingray. Ooh. And one thing that we need to say is that, you know, they don't just kind of flippantly use the Stingray name for any vehicle that they have. It's gone away for a while. And GM looks at it as a moniker that has to be earned.
Yeah, it's kind of like a mark of quality.
It absolutely is. I mean, it's reserved for special Corvette models. And I think it goes all the way back to 1959. There was a race car that had it. And then on I think it was 1963, the C2 design, which is an incredible design, by the way. That's probably one of my favorites. I've got a few favorites along the way.
More than the C3?
But possibly, yeah. Possibly. I think the C2 design is maybe my favorite. The 63 splitbacks, mm-hmm. and, you know, that era. But the Stingrays of that era, they're probably, you know, some of the most, I guess, well-known, most well-recognized vehicles, and they were just outright performance cars. And of course, you know, the Stingray name hung on for a while and went away and came back. And, it's just, I think that, you know, for them to bring it out again for the 2014 says a lot about the vehicle that they've made. And they put a lot of pride into this vehicle. I mean, this vehicle, if you watch any of the, General Motors, or Chevrolet, I guess, materials about this online. They've got the whole website dedicated just to the 2014 Corvette, and they've got short videos, and they've got a whole, you know, page that's kind of drumming up excitement for it before it arrives in the showrooms, because it's not out right now. A lot of this that you'll see is that they use a lot of phrases about honoring the craft, and, mm-hmm. you know, this is the enemy of the same, and they've got a lot of catchphrases like, you know, beauty and purpose and a beautiful weapon, and, you know, phrases like that along the way that really show you that, you know, that they're really taking every single bit of this seriously. And before I even forget this, I've got to say one quick thing. One of the quotes from one of the engineers in this car, in this video about making the car, was saying that every single gram of weight that goes into this Corvette has to earn its way onto the car. And I thought that was a fantastic quote. It's like, you know, there's nothing that we take for granted. Everything has to be scrutinized. Is it necessary? And if it is, how can we make that part the lightest, the strongest, the best that we can? And that's every tiny little detail. That's exterior, interior, powertrain, mm-hmm. chassis, whatever it happens to be. Everything has been scrutinized on this car. So it's extremely well put together. And not that the ones prior hadn't been. It's just that this is that much better. It's an enormous step up.
Now, I think at this point, if you're okay with it, we should talk about some of the stats.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, so let's start with the weight, because I agree that is a fantastic quote by the engineer. The frame is new. It is aluminum. It is 100 pounds lighter than the previous iteration.
That's amazing. That's a huge weight savings.
Yeah, and it's 57% stiffer than the steel frame under the 2013 and Grand Sport models.
Always good.
So this also has a magnetic-based damping system, a limited slip differential. So this actually will handle a little bit better, too, mm-hmm. in addition to being lighter.
I'm going to talk about handling in a short while, I promise, because there's a lot to that. There's several modes you can select and all this.
Yeah, so,
Yeah.
And then, oh, you're right. Okay, sorry. I got excited for a second, and let me get back to
no
basics
problem.
We're at. So that gives it 455 horsepower, 460 pound-feet of torque. And this also has little thing called cylinder deactivation.
Yeah, yeah, which a lot of people may not like, really. But there's a couple of different things like that. And, man, I do want to get into that as we go through, because there's a few things like that. Like, you know what, I'll just say it now. There's also variable valve timing and direct injection, which is something brand new for this engine as well. They've never done that on Corvette. On any of those three things, it's never happened on a Corvette. So that's a big deal for GM or for Chevrolet, really.
Right, and I can see how some people might not be a fan of some of this stuff, especially traditionalists, because the cylinder deactivation cuts fuel to four of the cylinders under a light load.
But that's something that happens when you're at highway speeds, you know, if you're cruising. Mm-hmm. And there have been some engines in the past that have they've tried this. There's been some that are successful. There's been some that are horrible failures. And, you know, I know that they've got their act together for this one, and, you know, the successes have come much later than the failures, which were early on.
Sure.
Can I just quickly?
Yeah.
My grandfather, you know how I've mentioned him a few times, many times on this podcast.
Yep.
He drove those giant Cadillacs, right?
Oh, nice. The land yachts.
Huge Cadillacs, right?
Yeah.
And he had one in specific, and I laugh every time I hear about cylinder deactivation, because he had a Cadillac that had an engine that they called the 864 engine. And it's exactly what this is. It would reduce the cylinder activation down to 6 when you didn't need 8, and down to 4 when you didn't need 8 again. So, you know, it would step down from 8 cylinders to 6 cylinders to 4 cylinders. And that thing gave him horrible trouble. And it was a nightmare engine, and it's known that it was it gave a lot of people a lot of trouble. But if I were to go to him now, because he's still around.
Yeah.
If I were to go to him now and even mention that car with that 864 engine, he would probably grab his head and, you know, shake it. Cause I mean, it was such a headache for him. But anyways, anytime I hear a cylinder deactivation, I think of that. But then I think of like the positive examples too. I think there was a Hemi engine, from Chrysler, from Dodge, that had cylinder deactivation that was tremendously successful. It was very well done, and it worked out great. I mean, and I can see that, you know, I know by what I've heard and what I've read and what I've looked at, you know, in the last week and a half, 2 weeks about this Corvette, that, you know, they've got it together for this deactivation. So I want to quell any concerns, I guess, that, you know, that there's going to be trouble with this one.
Yes, and
as much as I can, anyways.
Yeah, it's fair that you say that, because, you know, as people can probably tell from the context of this conversation, the overall purpose of having cylinder deactivation at all is to increase efficiency.
Correct.
Right? So we've got the 2014 Stingray getting 29 miles per gallon on the highway, and previously that was 26 miles per gallon on the other model.
Yeah, and you know what? This is also going to help out with GM's CAFE standards that they have to meet
that.
You know, the fleet standards that they're required to make, you know, like certain miles per gallon average. And
oh, we have to do a CAFE Racers podcast.
You know what? That's good. CAFE Racers, CAFE standards, CAFE. We should go to a cafe and
we should pour over our live
show
at
notes.
A cafe.
Why not? So all CAFE all day.
So back to the stats. This is something that I know you really wanted to talk about, the drive modes.
Yeah, you know what? Let me.
Am I jumping ahead?
Well, maybe not totally, because there's other things that I want to get back to, but I'm gonna jump back and forth then. So let's talk about these drive modes, because this is a big deal. It's a driver selected function, and there's really 12 different attributes that are affected by this this driver mode select. There's this magnetic selective ride control. The exhaust sound is affected. The trans shift pattern, the electronic throttle control, all these different things. But the modes themselves, these different modes that the driver is allowed to select, they go from most conservative to most aggressive. I'll list them.
Okay.
There's the weather mode. There's the eco mode, tour mode, sport mode, and then track mode, and they're just exactly what they sound like. If you're in even poor weather conditions, you want to select weather. And you want to go for best miles per gallon, you want to put it in the eco mode. If you're just kind of driving around town, general driving, I guess you'd call it eco mode. Touring mode, maybe long distances, you know, like you're on the highway and you're just, I don't know, touring mode is something different. I don't really know that. Sport, of course, that's a little more spirited driving, and then track, you know, that's going to be the most aggressive setting. And everything, I mean, the suspension, the chassis settings change.
Brake intervention.
And Not only that, the entire cluster switches when you select these different modes. So, you know, there's this display in front of you, and it's not the same for all five modes. So when you select eco mode versus, let's say, sport mode, you're going to see a completely different cluster in front of you, which is an incredible thing.
That is true.
It's really neat. And
it's
to
like
see
a different car.
Yeah, it really does. It becomes a different driver cockpit area.
Oh, and
really.
I think touring is like the default.
Oh, okay. That's good.
I think that's why it's so vague.
Okay. You know, I can understand that. Touring is just default is like that's when you get in, you turn the key, and that's what it's automatically
that's
what, in.
That's the first cluster you'll see.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Okay. So sorry I didn't know the details.
Don't apologize.
Now, you talked about the frame and everything. There's also carbon fiber hood and roof on this thing.
Oh, yeah. How did I forget that?
We recently talked about carbon fiber with the wheels, right?
Right.
But not in the Corvette, but carbon fiber wheels on another podcast. Mm-hmm. And this one, this new Corvette, has a carbon fiber hood and roof, which is standard. It's not even an option. It's standard. And I think you can get a transparent one, which is glass. So, you know, you can opt out of that. But the standard roof is carbon fiber and standard hood as well. Of course, it takes weight off the front of the vehicle and off of the highest and largest panels, which also helps to lower the center of gravity, which is big in a car like this. You mentioned the engine already, and we talked about all the different, advancements, I guess, with that.
You know what we should talk about?
What's that?
We need to talk about the acceleration and the speed, because that's what so many people are listening for. But before we do, what do you think about taking a quick ad break?
Why not?
All right, and we are back, Mr. Benjamin. Would you do the honors with the acceleration?
Ah, they have promised all along that the acceleration in this car would be from 0 to 60 in under 4 seconds.
Yep.
Under 4 seconds. Now, that's pretty darn impressive. Mm-hmm. And when you hear the price of this car, you may not believe it, because that kind of ties into this to me. I don't know why these two are linked to personally.
Okay.
But the coupe itself, the coupe, will sell for something like $51,000. That's an MSRP estimate right now at this point. They're not sure exactly that that's going to be it, but that's what it's estimated at. That's shipping and everything.
I would say that ends up being 52.
Maybe. You know, we'll see how it goes. Yeah. You're anticipating a bump, I see.
Yeah.
And the convertible is going to be about 56,000. Now, the reason I tie price in with that, with this 0 to 60 time, and I don't know why I do that. I mean, because there are a lot of smaller cars that are $25,000 that'll do something similar. You know, like, maybe a Subaru WRX or something like
that. Yeah, but they're not as powerful.
Correct. Yeah. Because you're talking about a Corvette. I mean, this is a big car, because this car has been built to be longer, lower, wider than the previous generation Corvette, which says a whole lot, really.
Right, because this is in the latest in a line of cars that were always aiming for longer, lower, wider.
That's right, and you know who that was from, right? That was Harley Earl.
Yes.
Way, way back in the day, that said, you know, I want these cars longer, lower, wider, and they you know, Detroit pretty much adhered to that, or General Motors adhered to that anyways, and really, all of Detroit did. But, and then they got away from it with a fuel shortage thing, but, this one, for it to be longer, lower, wider than the current Corvette, I mean, you've seen current Corvettes on the road.
Yeah.
They're already plenty long, plenty low, plenty wide, right?
Yes, sir.
I mean, this is going to be, I think, an impressive road-going car. It's going to look good on the road, and it's slightly more than the current vehicle.
Now, yeah, it's like 1,400 more?
Yeah, that's it. That's the big thing, is that, you know, this is a completely redesigned car, built to, I mean, I'm going to say, like, it's more of an international car, and in that, you know, it's not quite supercar, but it's bordering on exotic.
Yeah.
It could be a showpiece for somebody. Other people, it could just be another car, I guess.
You know what they call it, right?
What's that?
An attainable dream car?
Yeah, I guess so. It's kind of their flagship car, right? I mean,
It is their flagship.
It is their flagship car. And they're selling it for $51,000, which is really, you said, $1,400 more than the current coupe, which is pretty impressive, because, you know, the horsepower is going up, the torque's going up, all new design. You know, you can get a different performance exhaust with this thing that, you know, ups it even more, the horsepower even more. Like another 5 horsepower. horsepower, I think.
They completely designed the interior, redesigned the interior.
Yeah, the interior is really, and I know I sound like I'm gushing about this thing. I don't mean to because I haven't even seen one in person, but it's really, I'll say it's beautiful. It's a beautiful interior.
No, Scott, can you give us a little bit of context on this? Because everywhere I looked, there's a long-standing gripe from Corvette loyalists that says the interior could use some work.
Yeah, I guess as with any car line, you know, the design, I guess, gets a little bit staid, a little bit stale. And I think that was what was going on. They were saying that, you know, maybe the materials themselves were on the cheap side. And I don't mean that to be, you know, too despairing towards GM or Chevrolet in any way. It just happens. And that's what happened. Remember we talked about the Viper.
Oh,
and it
yes.
was the same way, which is now the SRT. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's Viper SRT, but it's not Dodge anymore or whatever.
Right.
But that was the main complaint with that is that, you know, the interior was really not – it was showing its age.
Maybe. I like that. And
Lincoln was the same way. Remember we talked about that with the Lincoln. It was showing its age. So, you know, they've got to update. And that's exactly what the Corvette designers have done. Now, they've used – just premium materials, and it's all, you know, well stitched together. I mean, everything is, you know, leather covered, and it's got this really nice feel to it.
Even the frame, they took the steel out of the seat frames and replaced it with magnesium.
Yeah, it's magnesium seat frames, which are really cool. And you can get two different types. You can get a GT seat, and then there's another one, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a competition sport seat, mm-hmm. Which is more for the track driving. I guess the GT seat is like kind of the general seat. It's a little
daily driver seat.
Yeah, it's a little more cushy, but still it's a performance seat.
Right.
The competition seat is, of course, for track driving. It's a little less forgiving, maybe a little extra support for lateral acceleration, things like that. But again, same magnesium frame. They use really high-end, very refined and very authentic materials is how they put it, authentic materials. So what they mean is if it looks like leather, it is leather. If it looks like carbon fiber, it is carbon fiber. It's not, you know, some cheap overlay or wrap.
Sure.
And the material, like the materials and the metals and the fabrics and everything, they all are pleasing to the touch. How about that? That's probably the best way to say it. You know, it's a comfortable car to be in. It's a comfortable car to look at, you know, because it's a very... Mm-hmm. I guess it's a nice design, really. That's probably what I'm getting at.
And also, they're still doing the, or following, rather, the trend that we see in a lot of premium vehicles nowadays, which is the electronic aspects, the computerized aspects, mm-hmm. are stepping forward at an unprecedented rate. I mean,
sure.
The difference between the 2013 and the 2014 in this dimension is startling because the 2014 Stingray has 69 different readings showing up on that cluster. Isn't that a lot? Is this a plane?
It does seem like a lot. And when you look at the interior, it's a very impressive interior. I was just showing that to our producer, Noel, and saying, you know, doesn't this look like you're driving, or you're not driving, you're flying mm-hmm. a jet? I mean, it looks like a cockpit.
Right.
A fighter cockpit, really. I mean, and the cool thing is that it's all, and I know a lot of cars have done this now, but it's all bent and angled towards the driver,
mm-hmm.
and the passenger really, there's just a glove box over there, and maybe a vent, you know,
yeah,
that's about
yeah.
it. I mean, you're merely the passenger in this vehicle, clearly. This car is all about the driver, and you can tell that just by looking at the overall dash view, you know, what's available to the driver, what's available to the passenger, which is really nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's such an impressive layout and design, and they say that it becomes, very automatic, it's very ergonomic, I guess, in the way that things are laid out and the way that, you know, when you switch between different modes, it's not as challenging as you think to really kind of get your bearings as to what's what. You're able to quickly pick up on, you know, okay, this is where I need to look for this instrument or this instrument. And, you know, as far as reaching for things, everything is where it should be.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a comfortable feel, even though there's a lot and it sounds complex.
It's intuitive.
It's intuitive. That's maybe the best way to put it, Ben.
So I want to, before we go any further, now you pointed out earlier, Scott, that you feel as though you might be gushing a little bit.
But
we're gonna save that. We're gonna nip that in the bud because before we started recording, when we were off air, you said that there was something outrageous.
That's right. And you know what? I will get to that in just a moment, but you know what we need to do first?
What's that?
Probably should take a quick break for another ad.
Oh, good idea.
Okay, so we're back, and you know, I know I said, you know, that there's something that's an outrage, I guess, but maybe that's overstating it a little bit. But there's something I think a lot of the purists are going to really, really dislike about something that's coming. It's not on the 2014. So the one that we'll initially see at the dealers is not going to have this feature. They're talking about future Corvette Stingrays. So maybe in 2015, 2016, right, on the road. They're talking about equipping them with start-stop technology.
Why?
Okay, this is now the really odd thing about this is, now I know that it's about fuel saving and, you know, economy and everything.
Sure.
Understood that. I understand that. They're saying that future Corvettes may be equipped with this start-stop technology. They've opted against it for the 2014 because it would hurt the car's high-performance image initially, right?
Right.
Totally understand that. I get that, and I feel the exact same way.
I think it's a good idea to not ever do it.
I think so, too. And, you know, they're saying that GM may be forced in the future to make this a standard feature because of fuel economy requirements.
Oh,
and
right.
So that's what's the driving force behind this whole thing. Otherwise, there would be no reason for them to do that in this car. Mm. Now, you know, what's funny about this, and when you really, really think about it, you know, it just doesn't quite fit with this type of vehicle, right?
It doesn't fit at all, but they did say they're trying to make it more powerful and more fuel efficient.
Yeah, but imagine this. You're in a 2014 Corvette Stingray. You got that 6.2 liter engine that has, what do we say, 455 horsepower. It's probably growling pretty good. You know, it's got a good sound to it. You pull up to a stoplight, it's dead quiet. Then you go to take off from that stoplight, and then it picks back up again. It just doesn't seem like that's the type of application for this technology. Is that right? I mean,
yeah, I'm with you, man. I mean, try it out, sure, by all means, make some prototypes and see. But I think that quite a few Corvette drivers, especially people who are familiar with Corvettes, and quite a few of them are not going to like that.
Oh, I absolutely think a lot of them. I think this is going to be a near 100% number that aren't going to approve of that technology. So, man, I don't know what to do about that. But that's happening, you know, probably in the future, not on the 2014. But I did want to get it out there that that's what's happening. And you mentioned a lot of electronics, a lot of different things that are happening, right? We haven't really talked about the magnetic dampening and the suspension or anything like that. But I do want to say that, you know, there's a base version and there's a Z51 performance package that people can get.
I guess
these suspensions in this thing are what some of these reviewers that have already driven them call vastly different. They say that it's a completely different animal.
Mm.
Like when you drive the base version versus the Z51 performance package, it's like driving a completely different car on the track. Now they've had it set up for these reviewers in a like an autocross situation, a parking lot with cones, and you know, who can get around the cones fastest. So, you know, they're able to experience it firsthand directly, like this is what this feels like, and then hop in the seat of this one and see what that feels like.
Mm-hmm.
And the Z51 just performs so much better in that type of situation. It was you know, of course, it's more of a sport or track performance, you know, oriented vehicle than the base version, but and the Z51 package is an additional $2,800. So, you know, that's not a whole lot of extra money when you're talking about something that's already costing you $51,000.
Right, comparatively.
Yeah, jump it up to, you know, 53.8.
Mm-hmm.
Not a big jump comparatively, you're right. But it does give you larger wheels, high performance tires, of course. There's a completely unique chassis tuning and suspension, that's available with this. And of course, you know, it's a little bit rougher on the streets. They always feel like they need to mention that. And of course, then there's the magnetic ride control suspension on the Z51, which that's the big deal, the magnetic ride control. And we'll go into that some other time.
Okay,
that's its own topic. Man, some of these other advancements. You mentioned electronics,
right? Yeah, they're using what is I would say the MyLink infotainment system thing, it's getting generally positive reviews. People like it.
Okay.
Now, for me, you know, I'm a little bit old school with this stuff. I hate to sound like a cantankerous old man. I don't know if I'm old enough to do that yet. But honestly, Scott, is it a good idea for people to have internet browsers and stuff in their car? I mean, I know that MyLink is built with safety in mind. But I am so suspicious anytime I see an infotainment says, I don't think people should have TVs in their car. I'm going
to
say it.
They will constantly tell you that, you know, it's not designed to be used while driving. And, you know, it's not designed for this and that. But you know that people are going to be using it while they're driving.
Right. And I mean, I get it if you have like a Dodge Caravan or something. You're on a road trip with the kids.
Sure.
And to have a TV in there for mm-hmm. the kids to watch or for people who aren't driving.
Anyone except the driver.
Yeah, I feel like there's already a lot going on when you're driving a car.
Mm-hmm.
And music is cool, but I'm sorry. Let me get off the soapbox before I ascend it completely and just say that, yeah, the electronics are complex. My only gripe is, you know, a gripe that I have with every car that's coming out with an onboard intuitive, you know, touch screen mm-hmm. entertainment system like
sure.
that. I just think it's too easy to not focus on driving.
It's just a little too much is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's a little too much, but you know what, man? I am somebody trying to empty the ocean with a bucket in that respect because the tide has already turned and the next car anyone buys 5 years from now is going to have something like that.
You know
that.
What? I totally understand what you're saying. I mean, it's just it's a little bit too much of a distraction. I personally couldn't do it. I know other people out there that can do it. I can't even I mean, I couldn't even manage dialing a phone or something in my car. I don't even attempt it. I'm strictly
mess with the radio.
I don't mess with it one bit. I'm strictly eyes on the road, you know, driving that set.
I have this picture of you hopping into your car. It's on an unfamiliar radio station, but you don't find out about it until you're accelerating. So you go, oh, I guess it's just Tejano music for now.
I'm stuck with that. Yeah, that's going to be a Zydeco for me. That's it. So, all right. So
yeah,
we talked about electronics. I guess there's a few things. You know, I want to get back to electronics in just a second.
Okay.
But, you know, we mentioned all these different handling characteristics. There's active handling, stability control, there's mm-hmm. performance traction management. But again, they've made it so that, you know, this is a driver's car. Don't get me wrong there. They can turn all that off if they want.
Sure.
And I know that there's some type of, you know, there's residual bits of this left in there, you know, that's still active. But, for the most part, you're able to turn this stuff off if you don't want to use it. So, you know, even though they're dumping in all these different electronic controls, you know, that are safe and electronic stability control and,
mm-hmm.
You know, performance traction management and all this stuff.
You can get rid of it.
You can.
Or at least you can mute it.
Yeah, like yeah. You can think that it's totally gone if you want to. And I know that there are track modes and things like that that
sure.
you can put the car into. Also, aerodynamics. Man, mm-hmm. we haven't even talked about aerodynamics. There's so much.
There's a lot to talk about.
Aerodynamics. All right. So, you know, there's a functional hood outlet in the front. And the interesting thing about this is that the radiator air that goes through the lower front grille exits right through the hood almost. It goes up over the glass then. And this is a race car solution to this problem. It's not what happens with most automobiles. Most automobiles, the hot air from under the hood exits below the vehicle or flows through most vehicles, or it intakes through the hood and then flows out underneath.
Sure.
This is very much like a race car in where that it enters through the front, exits through the hood and goes over the vehicle. Completely different than most cars out there on the road.
Now, let's take a second here
yeah.
because let's realize General Motors is trying to do more than one thing with this vehicle. I mean, first off, buying, I won't know until I drive it, or I'll believe you if you drive it and you tell me this. It sounds like they're pitching these different modes as almost completely different vehicles,
mm-hmm.
right? So averaging out, that's a little over 10 grand a vehicle.
Oh, well.
Not that unreasonable at all.
That's really not that unreasonable
you're,
at all.
You're really saving money if you think about it.
Yeah, that's right.
This is how I'm going to pitch it
it's
to my
like,
girlfriend.
It's like five vehicles in one, Ben.
Yeah, that's how I'm going to pitch
you
it.
You know what else will be a big sell?
What's that?
This has a 7-speed manual transmission. Now you can get an automatic transmission,
yeah,
which is
why
a,
would you?
Well, I don't know. There's
yeah,
reasons
okay.
for it, but
yeah,
I'm also a fan of the manual, but let me tell you about, well, first, The 6-speed is a paddle shift, of course, as you would expect. That's
right.
The automatic. Now, so you can paddle shift the automatic, which is still pretty cool.
That is cool.
The manual transmission, which is, you know, the normal stick, you mm. know, with the clutch and everything that you would normally find with a manual transmission, it has something called active rev matching. And this is something that's unique. It's a this is really cool, and I'll describe it how the engineers described it. As soon as you start to move the shifter towards another gear, the vehicle recognizes that and it blips the throttle so that you get the engine at the exact right speed in order to match the revs exactly where it should be for that gear. And it will determine whether you're trying to upshift or downshift. and it will adjust the engine speed accordingly. So you're going to have these seamless shifts, even though you may not be an expert shifter. Mm-hmm. You know, you may not be someone who's very, very well versed at that, but this is going to make you, this car is going to really smooth out your driving. It's going to make for transparent downshifts. It's just something that I don't know, it's going to make you shift like a professional driver, really. I mean, if you think about it. I mean, it's going to really, really help you out quite a bit. And I don't know if active rev matching is something you can turn off or not. I haven't, you know, dug deep enough into that, because some people may not like that. But I don't know why you wouldn't. If you're a good shifter now, it's just going to make you even better. If you're not a great shifter, it's going to make you okay.
That's a very positive thing to say. I only have like one or two more things.
Yeah, I'm pretty much on the end of this one. I feel like I've been doing this commercial for the 2014 Corvette, but that's not the case. It's just we're going by General Motors and Chevrolet's information that they've put out so far, and we're based on, you know, what reviewers have said, and of course they're all very positive.
Yeah.
I haven't really heard anything bad about it.
Yeah, this isn't a stinker. I actually have also not heard anything bad. The stuff that I have heard as criticism on forums or whatever is pretty much just referring to some of the same things we've mentioned that purists wouldn't like.
The deactivation of the cylinders and
that kind of stuff.
Okay, some of the variable valve timing maybe.
Yes, exactly.
And I can imagine what they're going to think about start-stop.
I think we already know what everybody thinks about start-stop. I mean, GM probably doesn't like having to have start-stop in there.
I would not think so. That's something that they've they protested it for 2014, so we'll see how long they can hold out.
So one last note to end on then. The direct competitor for Corvette, as GM sees it, is the Porsche 911.
Oh, wow.
So they've got some sales numbers that they're looking at, and this ties into what I think should be one of the bookends for our podcast here. Now, we started off, I think, early on in here, one of us had the quotation about how it was supposed to please the people who are brand loyal, but it's supposed to be aimed at a new crowd, too.
Sure.
That is really one of the end games of the 2014. I mean, that's why it's so different. That's why it's called a Stingray. That's why it has all these new, not just bells and whistles, but new and significant improvements to its performance. It's supposed to, hopefully, especially with the new design, draw younger buyers into this, or people who would not normally buy a Corvette.
Yeah, and without going to a tremendous price increase, because, you know, I'm looking at the list. I mean, from going from 49.6 right now for the base coupe, all the way up to the ZR1, which sells for $112,000. They couldn't make such a big jump. You know, they had to do something that was in the price range for that younger buyer, right?
Yeah, and they're trying to get a younger crowd in Europe, because, you know, Corvette historically has not been the biggest success in Europe.
Yeah.
So we're going to see where this goes. I don't think this is a gamble. I do think this is a smart move, and I do think there are some compromises. I don't know, man. This is a car that I would definitely consider buying it. I almost said I'd definitely buy it, but I feel like you always have to take a test drive first.
I don't know, man. Corvette's Corvette. I love Corvettes. I always have. And, you know, I've had a few friends that have had them. My brother has one right now.
My grandfather had a Corvette.
My grandfather didn't have a Corvette. He had some other fantastic cars, but never a Corvette that I know of.
Oh, okay.
So, but they've been around the family, you know, here and there. So, man, I don't know. I'm kind of the same way. I'm still 50-50 on that design, though. I mean, I mentioned that early on.
Yeah, that's true. But you know, you're not the kind of guy who likes people fixing stuff that's not broken.
That's true. Yeah.
But we would like to hear what you guys think about the 2014 Corvette. And, you know, go ahead and throw in some ideas that you would recommend to GM if you spoke with them directly. You can drop us a line at Facebook. You can give us a holler at Twitter. And you can send us an email directly. We are
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.